Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us on this post-debate and very, very important morning. We'll talk about what happened last night. We'll talk about what is going on today. And of course, a couple of things about how this will work today. We've been doing these roundtable lockbox specials. Today, we're doing two. It's a, I think, Bob, you'll remember this from the good old days of 80s radio. It's a Wednesday double shot.
Yes.
And so we're going to do two.
Two REO songs.
That's right. That's right. So from now until about 10:20 or so, we're going to be talking about the debate, and we're going to have a debate review and talk about that. We'll also intermix, obviously, conversations about what is happening in the Middle East, which did become a topic of conversation, although not for as long as I thought it would, during the debate last night. Then, at 10:30, we will present the second of our special lockbox roundtable panels, and that will spotlight on the climate crisis, paying special attention to plastics and recycling, and the roundtable lockbox special will continue in just a moment. We'll be going over to Ray and Sarah. They'll set the table for what we need to do this morning, and our job is to set the table here to tell you what is coming up and to get the ball rolling. Let me introduce our panel for this part of the program. We welcome Siena College Professor of Comparative Politics, Vera Acarias-Kelly. Good morning, Vera. How are you?
Good morning. Well, I'm personally doing well, but I must say teaching a Middle East politics class yesterday was a bit of a challenge because explaining all the dynamics of what's going on is not uncomplex, and a lot of people get confused.
Okay, so I need to take this class. So help me. It is confusing, and it's a lot, and right. It's not something you can learn in a day.
No, you can't. I really am trying in this class to build up knowledge. We started out initially looking at what is happening with the state of Israel, its democratic system, its parliamentary democracy, and then looking at what is developing now, in particular with Hamas, the idea of a ceasefire, the release of potentially still surviving hostages, and then West Bank, and now we're broadening out to Lebanon, Hezbollah, Iran, and so we're looking at the broader complexities. So I'm trying to build a mosaic of knowledge, which is really difficult because my student said to me yesterday, oh my gosh, in an hour I learned more about the Middle East than from watching a week's worth of coverage, you know, on various outlets.
Well, I now want to introduce the pull in our mosaic of knowledge. How are you? It is Bob Griffin, Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany. Bob, thank you so much for being with us. Always a pleasure to have you here.
Well, thanks, Joe, because I'm ugly today because I didn't get my beauty sleep because I stayed up and watched the debate last night. So we did it for you. So
I know. You're doing it for us, and we appreciate it. We really do. It was quite an event, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. Let me introduce, probably should have gone to her first because she's, she was camping out here waiting to get in. And that was political consultant Libby Post, and we're thrilled to have Libby with us on this Wednesday morning. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine.
All right.
You know.
Fine is good.
Day in paradise.
Seems like we have to talk her into it, folks. Yeah, I don't know.
It's fine.
How it's going.
You know, I'm fine.
And in just a moment, good. We'll also hear from CEO of the Business Council of New York State, Heather Mulligan. Coming up in the conversation at 10 o'clock, we will talk to Associate Professor in the Political Science and Legal Studies Departments at Suffolk University. Rachel Cobb will be here. She was with us during our first presidential debate panel that we did during that and in the nighttime. We were on last night, and we are back with you this morning. We had a preview last night. We have a review this morning and go over what we saw over the 90-plus minutes that was broadcast from New York City on the CBS television network and simulcast to all of us around the world. So we have, in just about a moment, we're going to go over to a minute or so, we're going to go over to the Lockbox folks. They're going to set up everything. And as a reminder, this is for the Lockbox. We're doing this for our October Lockbox, and it's October. And we need to make the money to keep the station going, and it's really important that we do this. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. And I just want to remind listeners that if you would like to get in on the conversation, tell us what you thought about the debate, and we'd love to hear what your thoughts are on the debate. All you have to do is write to us, panel@wamc.org. We'll come right back and dig in with our panelists right after we go over to Ray and Sarah.
1-800-323-9262. That's the number that you need to know if you're going to call and support the station, support these special programs we're doing, support all of our programming. I'm Sarah LaDuke.
I'm Ray Graff.
Hi, Ray.
Oh, hi. Did I interrupt? I'm
not
sorry.
Not at all. Not at all. I was obviously asking you to say your name when I said mine. That's the cue.
I'm Ray Graff.
And I'm Sarah LaDuke. Okay. We could get in a loop. It's a Pavlovian response to identify yourself.
Hey, we have important work to do today.
Yes, indeed. The phone number is 800-323-9262. The website, wamc.org. You may pledge an either place to show your support for the important programming that WAMC provides. We are doing two special roundtable programs this morning, a current events and post-debate recap, which is in the line of what we normally do,
right.
And then a special
climate crisis
panel from about 10:30 to noon. Judith Enck will be here with a few other people, and it will be, you know, informative, probably terrifying, hopefully some guidance, maybe action items and hope to be given, but maybe not, and that's okay too. We still need to know about it. It is a big deal.
We have launched a series of special roundtable panels. You've been hearing them off and on for the last couple of weeks. They delve into key issues surrounding the upcoming election, and today is no exception, and we use that time, a couple minutes here and there, to raise some money for this radio station, and we need you. If you are ready to make a pledge, every dollar we raise right now counts on October 14th. That's the beginning of our October fund drive. And Sarah, there's a lot of money to raise, but everybody has done really well so far, and we're very, very pleased. We need you, though. If you haven't made that pledge, 800-323-9262. I see Barb King. I see Peter Hughes. They have been on the phones relentlessly.
Rob Chacon is in there.
We had Wanda Fisher last night, who was here all night with us. The number is 800-323-9262. Let's make the phones ring and help this radio station keep going, and we'll bring you all that blue ribbon content that we can.
And speaking of last night, Anonymous from Washington, Massachusetts, tasked us to reach the $240,000 point in the drive before the end of our special, and they would give us another $1,000. We didn't make it.
We failed.
A lot of people showed up. We did get a lot of pledges last night.
We sure did.
It was marvelous that, you know, we're so thankful for everybody who did pledge, but we didn't make the challenge. We ran out of time. We had to go to the vice presidential debate, of course.
It was a hard out.
Anonymous from Washington, Massachusetts has said, I'll extend it. I'll give you more time, but I also need to raise the goal since you are closer and you have more time this morning. So Anonymous from Washington, Massachusetts will give us $1,000 if we can reach the $250,000 point in the drive this morning.
Where are we now?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I meant to pull it up.
Let me give the number while you pull that number
Thank
up.
You.
800-323-9262. We really do need you, and we'll have some fun today. We'll raise some money, and we'll have a great roundtable panel. But we need you right now. WAMC.org, where you can make your secure online pledge. And we have, and I think we still have some of these left, a limited edition vote T-shirt. It's a beautiful black T-shirt with a WAMC logo on the front, and on the back, a vote with a check mark like you're voting, and it says vote be heard. If you want that, just specify your size. It's a $120 pledge or $10 a month. 800-323-9262. How much have we raised, and where do we got to go to get to that 250?
We have raised $237,000. $87.
Okay, so we have about 12,000 and change to go.
Yes, indeed. And then we could make the challenge and accept the $1,000 additional on top of that toward our goal from Anonymous in Washington, Massachusetts. We are hoping to hear from you. 1-800-323-9262 is the phone number. Keep calling, keep pledging. You can go on the website, WAMC.org. But for now, it is time to return to the roundtable panel in Studio A. Take it away, Joe Donahue.
Thank you very much, Sarah LeDuc, and thank you very much, Ray Graff. And do what you have to do. As you heard, it's vital that we make the money. If we didn't do it last night, then we do it today, and we keep on going. And that's what's going to make us whole, and that's what's going to keep us in the ballpark, as it were. We have a discussion brewing here on the debate that was held last night in New York City, the vice presidential debate. We are going to be going over to Rachel Cobb, who is a debate expert, an associate professor in the political science and legal studies departments at Suffolk University. And we'll be talking to Rachel at 10 o'clock this morning. We are also waiting for Heather Mulligan, who is the CEO of the Business Council of New York State. But Vera, Robert, and Libby are all here and are on time, and they're ready to go. So we will certainly put them to work. The debate last night was held, and it is being called by some a draw. It is being called by others that J.D. Vance did an excellent job. He had a smooth performance and really sailed through the debate and really didn't have a whole lot of trouble answering questions. Now, whether the answers were true or false, no. But did not stumble until we got to January 6th. And then there was Tim Walz's performance, and they did spar over immigration and abortion and foreign policy, and then eventually, as I mentioned, January 6th and Donald Trump's 2020 election loss. It is interesting to see the debate. I think that when you look at it, while viewing it, I did think to myself, it's nice that it's cordial. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that there's boring. It was a little boring, and mm-hmm. I kind of like that. I missed boring, and I enjoyed that. I didn't at any real point know what, and I will say this on both sides, always know what they were talking about, mm-hmm. in the sense of there was really no, they were talking about very minutiae that they were referring to things that had been said online or in posts or in quotes and different things, and I didn't always know exactly what they were talking about. Now, I would argue, and I'm not certainly putting myself on any kind of pedestal, but I do this for a living to listen to these things, and I didn't know what they were talking about. I just wonder what the general public thought of people who were really listening and sort of doing a deep dive of trying to figure out what they were talking about. I'd like to go around the room, get general impressions from our panel, and begin with Libby Post.
Well, you know, anybody can be taught to be a slick, willy kind of debater, which is what we saw last night with J.D. Vance. The issue here really is that he made Trump seem palatable because he didn't dumb it down. He like couched it in popcorn and sugar, you know, and what is that stuff that when you go to the carnival? That you can get cotton candy. That's what it is.
Yeah. I was thinking you were doing caramel corn.
Right. Well, he like, you know, swathed Donald Trump in cotton candy and tried to make the policies that they I know, right?
Ew.
The policies, you know, palatable to the vast majority of Americans, and not as horrible as they actually are. you know, Walz has admitted he's not a good debater. We saw that last night. You know, that is what it is. Vance was pretty slick. But when it came down to, excuse me, but are you going to do one of the few things that's actually your job, which is to certify the election? Will you do that? Mm-hmm. He could not say yes or no. He could not say whether Trump is wrong in saying that he won the 2020 election. And Tim Walz was like incredulous around all of that, which was fine, and said, yeah, win or lose, I'll certify the election because that's my job. Mm-hmm. And so there was that, you know, all the stuff about immigration and, you know, people eating cats and dogs. You know, we didn't get into it too much, but Vance lied. That's the thing. He lied all the way through. And when they started to fact check him, I mean, I thought the sexism of the whole thing was unbelievable, right? You have these two women, they're accomplished, blah, blah, blah. You know, Norah O'Donnell's the, you know, the anchor, right? And J.D. Vance just tried to run right over them, and they did the right thing. They turned off his mic because he wouldn't listen. He wouldn't respect the rules.
Yeah.
And that's part and parcel to this ticket. They don't listen. They don't respect the rules. They think they can make things right the way they want to do it, and that's it.
So maybe I'm allowed to say something quickly on the issue of sexism, and then I'll pass it on to...
Well, first of all, you're more than allowed to do
that. Oh, okay. I just wanted to...
And second of all, couch that way, who the hell am I to say no?
And thank you, JD.
Right, right. And the anti-patriarchy people win 2 points.
Yeah.
So the floor is yours.
Well, I
Dr.
just wanted
Kelly.
To I just wanted to say that what stood out to me as well was whenever Vance was talking about family related issues, you know, children, and he so happily talked about his own children and his own wife at some point. All he ever mentioned were the challenges for his wife to take care of three children and work full time and take care of the household.
Amazing?
Like, it is not his responsibility as a father to do half of that.
The first word, by the way, was that she was beautiful.
Yes.
I mean, it is shocking how he tried to couch himself as so supportive of families when, in fact, he basically dumped all of the responsibilities for child rearing on his wife in the commentaries. I was like, are you serious? I mean, you are clearly sending a message that women belong in the household, manage everything, especially child rearing, while you're so proud of them when they also are accomplished attorneys and also do other things, right? Like the double burden for the woman is supposed to be like, you know, this is like celebrated
it's
now?
It's the Ring of Roses from the Kentucky
Holy
Derby.
Holy moly. I couldn't believe it. I nearly fell off my couch.
Let's go over to Bob Griffin for his thoughts. By the way, welcome Heather Mulligan to the discussion. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good.
It's really nice to see you. Thank you very much. Actually, Heather's not late. She told us she was going to be in this
That's
time.
Right.
And you got in right in it. So thank you very much. We're glad to have you here. We're going to hear from Bob, and then we'll may have to take a break, and then we'll come back and hear from everybody else. Go ahead.
So I have 7 takeaways from last night.
Oh, boy. Oh, well, okay, so maybe we'll get to you around quarter of 10.
So first, immigrants have godlike power to cause damage. So housing costs, storms, locusts, flies, farm costs, congressional incompetence. It's all the fault of immigrants. So if you have a bad day today and somebody calls you on it, say it's the immigrant's fault. Mansplaining is a major at Yale Law, but ethics and truth are not. while whitewashing history use barrels, not buckets. Policy is boring, but it's really important. But it's really hard to do in an hour and 45-minute debate. Like JD, I hope his kids were asleep last night so they didn't have to watch their dad lie through an hour and 45 minutes of a debate. The new strategy for the both campaigns. So on the Trump side, I think what they should say is Trump, stay home, shut up, and play golf, and just have JD on the circuit. And then for Harris, only send Walz to events with camouflage and corn dogs. And the one misstep that JD had last night, because I thought he was particularly smooth, But it was one misstep where he stepped off the Empire State Building. And I don't think the lack of admission about what January 6th was, his absolute refusal to say whether he would have done what Pence did was absolutely fatal.
I have to say that usually in those type of events, it's under 15 minutes before I'm screaming at the television. But I got almost to the end, and it was not until he said that on January 20th there was a peaceful transfer of power, and that's when I started to scream.
He was much better. He was much smoother than Walz was, but that's just the type of people they are. I also think that Walz is just really nice and didn't call out the BS the way he should have.
What I found interesting is that Vance kept calling Walz Tim, and Walz kept calling Vance Senator Vance.
Yes.
And it was definitely a way for Vance to try to diminish who Walz is.
Although I did notice, which I didn't like visually, that Vance was always sort of looking, he must have been looking at the clock or something, like how much time is left, or he had this sort of, did you notice that?
The big clock
the two moderators. And so the way he looked, I always thought he's waiting exactly to figure out in his head what, how he's going to respond to something, or if he's going to respond at all and get ready to go, you know, so that was visually interesting to me, because his head, you could see that he was thinking on how to respond to certain ideas. So I found him slick. I found him unconvincing in terms of presenting a new self. He, you know, softened his edges. He said he never really meant to say that. He's reflected on things. He's become the, you know, the family man in a particular way, who's not going to, you know, challenge women the same way that the Republican Party right now does, in terms of being more focused on family and child rearing. It was very interesting to see that development, but it was not believable to me.
I thought Walz was making crazy faces. Like, anytime Vance was talking, they showed
pained.
A side angle, and he looked, a couple times he looked mad. Sometimes, but he's taking notes, and you get this side view of him. And
like,
I thought,
consternated.
I thought, you know, that just showed that this is not his comfort zone, right? He didn't want to have his face on the camera and get the full reaction to what Vance was saying. But I think it was a mistake to be scowling.
I have to pause you all here just for a moment. We'll get back into this conversation quickly. I want to throw it over to Ray and Sarah and remind you why we're doing what we're doing this morning.
This is Sarah LaDuke here with
Ray Graff.
Good morning. The phone number to call and support the station is 800-323-9262. Please give us a call at 1-800-323-9262 and give what you can, so show some support for WAMC, for the programming and the information that you are very likely rather accustomed to tuning into.
And we're just taking a few minutes here and there this morning to remind you that WAMC is raising money. It's our lockbox, and we are leading up to our October 14th beginning of our fund drive. We need you. If you are ready to make a pledge, we want to hear from you. We have a challenge this morning. It's a challenge we didn't quite make last night.
Nope, fell a little short.
Anonymous in Washington, Massachusetts, checked in this morning, and we got a slight reprieve, but we have to make a little more today. We had to raise $240 to make it last night. We almost got there. Now we have to hit $250 by the end of the roundtable. And Sarah LaDuke, we're at $234,492 right now.
Yes, indeed. So we do have a way to go, but we are very hopeful and I would say cautiously optimistic that the listeners will be there to support us and to help us make this challenge. We're all in this together, and they care.
We have new members to thank. Thanks to Anonymous in Athol, Massachusetts. No, it says New York, pardon me. Anonymous, is there one in New York? I guess there is. Anonymous in Voorheesville, New York, who says, just love the station. I listen all the time when I'm commuting from work, the main source of news. And thanks to Scott in Ballston Lake, New York. Thanks to David in New Paltz for the Hudson River Sampler. And thanks to Kevin in Charlemont, Massachusetts.
The phone number to call to support the station is 800-323-9262. We also want to thank Stacy in Highland, New York, Graham in Burlingame, New York, who says, I love WAMC, and Ross in West Sand Lake, New York, who listens to pretty much everything.
You can get yourself a new WAMC limited edition T-shirt for a $120 pledge. What is that? What is that?
It's a black T-shirt with a WAMC logo on the kind of, I mean, it's a T-shirt, so not the lapel, but, you know, this chest insignia, the standard chest insignia kind of area
right
near the shoulder. And on the back, it says, vote, be heard, with a checkbox.
It's a pretty slick looking T-shirt.
It is.
We've had a lot of T-shirts over the years. Some of them, you know.
Not to your taste. Not to your sartorial taste.
This one, however, yeah, and they come. You just specify the size when you make your pledge.
Straight from Milan, the new WAMC T-shirt.
And really?
No.
And you can specify your size when you make your pledge. You can do it. If you want to be a sustainer, it would be $10 a month. We love sustainers, and we'll tell you more about that as we roll along. It is a special roundtable panel. These are a series that we have concocted to go deep into key issues upcoming the upcoming election. Well, sort of.
Yeah.
It's sort of good English, but it's early, and I've had no coffee. Over to you.
You should have some.
Yes.
800-323-9262. A challenge on the table. Anonymous from Washington, Mass. will give us another $1,000 if by noon today we can reach $250,000, which would be a lovely feather in our cap, another benchmark total to have reached in the fundraising of the Lockbox. We will be back to tell you more, to ask you more, to implore and beg more. 800-323-9262. But for now, back to Studio A and the Roundtable panel. Take it away, Joe.
Coffee. Feathers coffee in our cap. Both sound lovely.
I'm going to sneeze soon.
Yes. Well, welcome back. We are having a look at what happened last night in the debate, and I unfortunately had to interrupt Heather as she was talking about what her takeaways were from the debate. And I guess we can go from the beginning. And I think let you go with this, Heather, but I think we sort of all in the room have agreed that Tim Walz was shaky, certainly at the beginning of the debate, seemed like he was struggling.
Yeah, I mean, I think first I should back up even further and say, it was great. They were talking about policy. It was a real debate. I'm a policy nerd. I love that they actually got into mm-hmm. some details and gave the framing for some of the things that are their differences, and that they were cordial and agreed on some things. I mean, it was a really, to me, civilized and very well orchestrated or run. I shouldn't say orchestrated. It makes it sound like they're puppets, but right. But it was. I thought that the moderators did a good job. My first thought when I turned it on was that I thought it was actually genius of Vance to wear the Barbie pink tie.
Because, I was wondering about that.
And he kind of coordinated with
Margaret Brennan.
Yeah, and so, but you know, I'm such a nerd about this stuff. I thought it was really good. I thought Walz really struggled and was not doing well in answering some pretty easy questions, which would have been softballs for him, quite a few. But he did kind of the second half, maybe mm-hmm. about halfway through, mm-hmm. kind of found his footing and, you know, really hit a very hard, I think, a big hit at the very end in his closing statement when he asked Vance, well, did Donald Trump win the last election?
Yeah, right.
You know, which, of course, Vance can't answer. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was fascinating. I get it that there's not a lot of people who are that interested. I don't think this moves anyone. Mm-hmm. But I was amazed at how adept Vance was at taking what, you know, when Trump presents him sound like really, really extreme policies and making them sound sensible and logical and kind of putting a framing around them that will have some appeal to people. The people who are on the fence are in a smattering of counties in swing states. I doubt many of them were watching, and I doubt any of them are going to be voting based on who's the VP candidate. Although I do think Trump's age, it's important that Vance perform well.
But think about the chutzpah, though. I mean, mm-hmm. to actually go on national TV,
international TV and say that Trump saved the ACA, the Obamacare.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, and not even smirk when he lied about it. Yeah. I mean, it just the there were so many times when I wish Walz had called him out. And, you know, a couple things. One is that yesterday's debate reminds us of how bad Trump's performance was and how good Harris was in the presidential level debate. And I don't want to lose sight of how good she performed in comparison.
Mm-hmm. And you know what's going to move the needle? The longshoremen strike and the situation in the Middle East. I now am convinced that those two issues may just decide this election.
Well,
storm.
I mean, and if that's the case, I worry that tilts it in favor of Trump.
Yes, unfortunately.
I think the one thing that Vance did very well was hitting the issues that they know are the concern issues, the economy, immigration. Did he overstate everything on those?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, the world was a perfect, glorious place. There were daisies growing out of the ground. The world was at peace. People were, you know,
dying,
drinking Pepsi in the fields and, you know, reading books in hammocks while Trump was president.
And
now everything's fallen apart.
And apparently, you know, when Trump makes decisions, everything works out smoothly, like his son-in-law's real estate deal in Gaza. Look at how that worked out. You know, they set the stage for what's happening now in part of, you know, the levels of violence we see now.
I had a flashback to the Biden-Trump debate and last night, because I remember after that them saying that Trump was just going on lying and lying and lying, which of course, you know, was true. But there was they said, well, the moderators will not be fact-checking, but the candidates agreed that they would be doing the fact-checking. That was similar to what the candidates agreed to last night. And here again, you would think you would learn a lesson, but I don't think that Walz did at all an effective job in slapping back at those just outrageous, the most outrageous of the claims that were made. He seemed more befuddled than assured when it was thrown to him to try to coordinate a response.
You see, and I wonder how much of that's cultural, though, Joe. I mean, my wife pointed out, she said, you know, that he's Midwestern polite, and she's Midwestern. She said, this is what you're, you know, well, bless your heart is a way of swearing at somebody. And you know, it's more Southern than
Southern.
Midwestern.
Yeah.
But he was incredibly polite. And Vance, for all of his issues, was also incredibly polite. Mm-hmm. I mean, they talked about where they were in agreement. They talked about where they were in disagreement. But at no point in time was it ever really acrimonious between the two of them, which doesn't make for good viewing. It certainly doesn't make for interesting TV.
I will say, I mean, I thought that Vance had an incredibly positive moment and showed a deep humanity when, you know, Walz mentioned that his son had witnessed a shooting, and Vance's response seemed not rehearsed. He would seem genuinely surprised, and he seemed like empathetic as a father would be empathetic.
Right.
And I thought that was, you know, really played well for him, for people who have doubts about his character. Not to say that I agree with, you know, all the other things he said, but I thought, you know, well played. I don't know. It seemed real to me. And I thought that was very, very interesting. And I don't think that happens when you have these, you know, completely, I don't know, orchestrated debates where everyone is hyper prepared. I think they're deadly focused on what's their next point? And this was a reaction that was not, you know, part of a script or anything.
I think the instructions from the Trump campaign to Vance was make us look like human beings. Make us look like we care about other people.
You are giving them more credit than I
would. I agree.
I don't think
they care about being human.
No, but I'm not saying that they care about being human. Mm-hmm. I'm saying make us look like we're human. Make us look like we're compassionate, because they know what Trump does, and it's the polar opposite of that.
I mean, it was about trying to get whatever that 1 or 2% of people who don't ask me how they can be undecided, but you know, they are undecided apparently, or they say they claim they are, trying to feel like they can be more comfortable with the next generation of Republican leadership, because Trump clearly isn't going to live forever. His time is limited in some ways. So there's a likelihood, possible likelihood that Trump might not be able to, if he wins, carry out the entirety of his presidency, and Vance would have to take on that role. So that's also a consideration. He has to be humanized for that reason.
Right. You know, and for all we're saying, I was talking to my wife while we were watching the debate, and Kelly said, okay, so both guys come to your door and they're trying to sell you siding, and you need siding. Which one do you let in the house?
That
J.D. Vance.
Yeah.
No, Tim Walz.
Tim Walz.
Tim Walz, I was going to say.
Right.
You know, J.D. Vance, you're like, the dog is upset.
Right.
And there's anything to get out. Yeah.
There's all these memes of, like, you know, J.D. Vance is the guy who complains to your condo association or whatever, the HOA, that you're not mowing the lawn. Tim Vance is the guy who comes over and mows your lawn.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, so that's the juxtaposition.
I mean, the perfect part of that would have been that you have someone who is likable and then also is able to fully articulate and to counter the arguments that were made. And I think most pundits say this. I agree with it. He certainly got better.
Yeah. The thing is Walz, the problem that he has is that he has been caught in a bunch of lies, right? And the Tiananmen Square one, he was asked point blank, you know, you said you were in Tiananmen Square.
Why are you not ready for
you
that,
You weren't
though?
In Tiananmen Square. And he, like, fumbled his way through the answer and I think described himself as a knucklehead, right, at one point. Which is just so inadequate. And I think, you know, you can say, and he said this before, I misspoke. But these were big things that he misspoke about.
Brian Williams and I talked about this. We said we could do this kind of thing. It was fine.
Right. I mean, there's got to be a better answer than what he gave. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, when he started talking about other things, like I was there when, you know, when they were discussing the Obamacare issue, Affordable Care Act issue, I was there, you know. Instantly, I'm like, I wonder if he was really there. I don't know, because I don't have that confidence that he remembers things accurately, which is a little bit of a problem.
Well, it is a little bit of a problem, but then you know the other guy is lying.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I mean, that's the thing. One of them you just assume is lying. The other one you hope isn't lying. And then there's a weird... a gymnastics that you have to do to figure out what's what.
Well, it's one I felt that Walz tells fish tales.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he caught a fish, but it wasn't
20 pounds and 100 feet long.
Right. And the other guy is trying to sell me a car that was involved in a flood.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
That's really, you know, he was smooth and you know, almost hypnotic, because there are times I was like, oh, man, he sounds really reasonable, and I'm like, wow. That's a little scary, you know.
No, I think that's the superpower, right?
Yeah. Right. That was the superpower. That was the instruction. I mean, I think the Trump campaign knows that they're losing on the personality part of this because of the way Trump treats people and acts and you know, is constantly name-calling and all of that sort of stuff. You know, the thing is that it was the last half where Walz did better, right?
Where a lot of people had already shut it off.
Right, yeah. Probably. Yeah. But those who stayed got
Although
to see that.
Although baseball was over by then.
Right, that's right. But and the Mets won. Yeah. But anyway. Yeah.
Congratulations.
I know. And but, you know, when Walz was talking about choice, when he was talking about some of the more important issues, the who actually won, he was pretty strong and very clear. And the none of your damn business line, I really does think resonates with people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, we need to recognize that, you know, women are going to come out to vote. It's going to be row, row your vote, because women are not happy with what's happening. And the idea that Tim Walz, which I thought was great, talked about the women who have suffered because of this, one of whom almost bled out in the car, the other one who died.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, I'm so sorry she died, says J.D. Vance. But you know what the undercurrent with that was? Well, it was really her fault. You know?
The other thing that I think Walz did quite well that stood out to me was the response to environmental concerns and the response to international trade. Because Vance could only talk about the fact that we need to strengthen manufacturing, we need to do this and that. And then Walz talked about, well, as the state of Minnesota, you know, soybeans, corn, and the need for partners globally to sell your products.
What he was able to do is point out or show that he has executive command, which is what this job is.
He does. He understood the complexities of those questions.
Right. And Vance is a senator, a one-term senator.
Yep.
Well, and
I have a little bit of a different view on that. Okay. I actually think, first off,
just less than a minute.
I think Walz overkilled on the farmer thing. I think he should have talked about manufacturing also in a broader sense. I think by overkilling on the farmer thing, he's like, this is the what I know. I am the president from Minnesota if I become president, not the president for the manufacturing belt that lost all the jobs. I think yes, he did fine in that context, but he could have gone much broader. And I also think Vance's explanation that when you lose manufacturing to places like China, who are using coal to generate electricity, you actually have an inverse effect. You have more pollution than if they were here and we were using natural gas. But it's a complicated argument.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to hold you there. We have to take a break. We'll be right back after we hear from Sarah and Ray.
Oh, we're on. 1-800-323-9262. That's the phone number, Sarah LaDuke.
Yes, indeed it is. And what is that phone number for, Ray Graff?
You know, it's the little mini pitch breaks we are doing during these special roundtable panels, and we have a great one for you today. It is coming your way all morning long.
All the way until noon. We have a double up today.
Exactly. And we're trying to raise some money for this radio station. Our fund drive begins October 14th, and that's wall-to-wall fundraising, and we want to make that as short as possible. This is an important time in this country. This is an election like we have not seen since, I don't know, Rutherford B. Hayes or something. I don't know. Anyway, we have a challenge on the table, and Anonymous of Washington, Massachusetts said, you know, last night said this, if you hit 240,000 in the drive, I'll give you 1,000. We ran out of time.
We did.
The VP debate started. We didn't get there.
It happens.
Right now, we are at, where are we?
We are at 236,849, so very close to that 240.
But
when Anonymous from Washington, Mass. Reassigned the challenge, they said you have to get to 250,000. So we're aiming for that by noon today, 250.
So we're in the 13,000s now, and we're doing very well. And this breaking news, Sarah LaDuke.
Uh-huh.
This came in. Wes brought this in just a moment ago. Anonymous from Albany is pretty jazzed about the whole thing.
Cool.
And perhaps this new format where we're breaking for a few minutes and raising some money and then going back to the roundtable. Anonymous from Albany is throwing another $1,000 on this challenge.
Amazing.
So that's too large if we can hit the $250,000 mark by
noon.
By noon. So let's make that happen. We have $13,000 to go. If you have not made a pledge at home or in the car, and be safe in the car, obviously.
Of course.
If you're flying an aeroplane, whatever, and you want to make a pledge, you can go to WAMC.org to make a secure online pledge. We got premiums. You want premiums? We got them. Or you can call us, Barb King, Peter Hughes. Some of the volunteers are all there. 800-323-9262 is the number. We urge you to call now. And remember, when we go back to the roundtable in a couple of moments, Sarah LaDuke.
Yes.
People can still pledge.
Yes, they can, especially online. But they can also call 800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262. So that's a $2,000 challenge. From one from Anonymous in Washington, Mass., and a brand new one
from Albany, New York,
just called in this morning. And we would, you know, take a moment here to think about, if you're out there listening and you do value the station, what it means to give $1,000. A lot of people couldn't afford to swing that, so it's very generous of these folks. But you're a full member of WAMC, whatever you pledge. Any little bit that you give us now helps us earn these $1,000 challenges.
$15, you're a member.
We would so appreciate that.
Yeah.
800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262. 9262. Thank you to new member Anonymous and Glenmont, to Richard and Marsha in Delmar, New York, who say WAMC is a vital source for us. Keep up the excellent work. We heard from Janet in Slingerlands, Anonymous in Belchertown, Linda in Santa Monica, California.
All right.
California. Lisa from West New York, New Jersey, loves the show, has listened as often as I can, thanking some people as we go along this morning, and we will thank more people next time we come to you. The phone number, 800-323-9262, the website, WAMC.org.
Keep pledging.
And we return now to the panel.
Thank you very much, and keep doing what you're doing as filling that lockbox and to get us our challenge and to our goal. All right. We were I want to go to letters, but any last thoughts before we go?
I do. I want to bring up the issue of housing, which I thought was a strong answer.
Yes.
And I can get my head around 3 million housing units. What I was screaming at the TV about was somehow taking federal land and building housing on it, which is in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, wait a second. You're in Walls started to try to explain – you know, like around Minneapolis, where people would actually want to live so you could have jobs and you have schools and things like that, rather than saying that we're going to build in the middle of Yosemite where there is no infrastructure and you'd have to actually build a city and people wouldn't want to move there. Mm-hmm. So that issue of housing, I thought, was a much stronger answer for Walls than
I agree. I mean, that was kind of a ridiculous argument, as if, you know, we could somehow create completely new cities out in nowhere and have manufacturing there and the happy life, you know?
All right, let's go to letters. Pamela writes, good morning, panel. I think everyone is on point this morning. Thank you for this great discussion. Query, how many undecided or uncommitted voters do you think really watched last night? And if they watched, do you think they made
Zero.
It through all the boring, quote-unquote, policy to the very end when Vance actually and clearly showed his colors? Thank you, and Shana Tova to all who celebrate.
Probably 10.
10 in total?
Yeah, 10 in total.
We're talking like 60 counties and 7 states. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's right. What this election comes down to, right?
Yep.
So 60 counties and 7 states, unless something crazy happens, you know, in one of these states where you've got prominent candidates in big trouble. There's a couple examples of that out there. But, it's very unlikely that this is going to change the outcome of the election. Very unlikely. I do think there's going to be fodder for really nasty commercials, because there were mistakes made. There were things said that were obvious, like misspeaking, that if you really want to do a bad, dirty ad against, say, a Tim Walz, at one point he said, I'm friends with school shooters. He didn't mean that. What he meant was the families. He knows the families of, but he left that part out. So you take that clip, you put it in a commercial, and it's just, you know, setting people on fire, kind of. It's awful, right? And I expect fully that we're going to see that. It's going to be what comes out of it in terms of discussion. What are the things that grab people's attention? What makes it to, you know, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, and commercials that's going to end up being, if there's any influence on the outcome whatsoever.
Let's go to Johnny, who says, everyone who says that Vance won the debate are not giving American people enough credit. The people who actually watched the vice presidential debate last night are not uninformed. Vance somehow managed to blame every issue on inflation and or immigration, two issues that we know the vice president has no power over. That seemed desperate to me. Meanwhile, the most viral moment today is Vance ignoring the results of a Democratic election again.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
That's what Americans will see.
The other missed opportunity for Walls, I think, would have been to call out the incompetence of the Republican-run Congress. The idea that A. Harris was somehow president and could have made the, implemented the policy was something that was allowed to slide. But more importantly, he did talk about Congress's role a couple of times, but he didn't do it in a way that I thought was clear for people at home, where Congress's inability to even pass a budget, you know, do the most basic responsibility they have is dragging this country down. In addition to, in my line would have been, in addition to voting for Harris, you need to clean Congress out.
Well, he did make the mention about the immigration bill that was on the table and was not voted, and how Congress underperformed on that, especially the Republican side. So he did make that point, but you're right. He could have expanded on that kind of pattern.
In Congress's approval ratings are so bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, but I do think that that many people do not have a full understanding of the role of the vice president.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm talking to my kids about it, they're like, well, isn't she like the number two? Like, she's like, they think of her as like, the vice president is like the executive, mm-hmm. you know, EVP of the country,
yep.
and has this really big hand
yep.
in policymaking, when that's right. not really how it works at all, right? I mean, ask anyone who's ever been lieutenant governor, you know, how much authority they
have.
You
actually
know.
Yeah.
But
I get more done, but I have all those funerals to go to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, this sort of question about executive power and executive decision making is completely understood. I misunderstood in this country. It's as if we thought of it as a sort of royal family monarchy in the old style that says make it so, or a dictator, make it so, and then second in command.
Jay writes to us and says both men were surprisingly and pleasantly civilized. These two men came across as intelligent and reasonable. I did find Vance addressing Margaret and Nora in almost every response to be obsequious and obnoxious, very insincere. Then we go to Betty, who says, thank you. I agree with Libby and Vera. I thought Vance was so sexist it made me nauseous, and the way he used the word choice when he's extremely anti-choice made me think he's just trying to con women. Vance is a smooth liar, and that's all he is.
Eddie Haskell.
That from
Eddie. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Ray writes, as a supporter of Harris Walz, I was deeply disappointed by Tim Walz's presentation. So many opportunities to call out Vance's lies were missed. Also, why did Walz not pay more attention to the camera images he projected? Mm-hmm. He looked old and often confused. In sum, a tied debate outcome is a win for Trump, unfortunately. That from Ray.
I'm not sure about that, Joe. I don't think Walz hurt the mm-hmm. ticket. I don't think, with a couple of exception of where his mouth was going versus his brain, there are a couple mm-hmm. of places where he misspoke, but I don't think he damaged the ticket. And honestly, I don't think it's gonna move the needle at all.
I think the last VP debate that moved the needle was Sarah Palin versus Joe Biden. I think that was probably the last time.
We go to Judy, who says, I thought Mr. Vance tried very hard to be a nice human being. He did not come across as authentic to me, and I don't think you can be at the same time a nice human being and a lackey for Donald Trump.
True.
Also, Eric, one thing is clear: after last night's debate, the Harris campaign won't keep trying to paint J.D. Vance as weird. That won't work anymore. Vance may be a lot of things. Weird isn't one of them. Well, I don't know about that.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I mean, he was not. The weird was not on display.
I thought he came across as very articulate, very polished. But I do think the sincerity factor is something that he needs to work on. And I think that, you know, mentioning his wife and family and his background, like, at every opportunity, we all know the story. You wrote the book. Everyone,
yeah.
you know.
Saw the movie.
You know, move on and let's see who you are now.
You know, what he said yesterday during the show is the bombing started in the Middle East, that they were probably trying to rewrite quickly a lot of the questions and make it a little more foreign policy centered. They didn't, and yet here's a huge issue that they spent just a scant amount of time on in the beginning.
They both fumbled, I have to say, because you got no clarity on foreign policy because they're all nervous about responding to it. As a matter of fact, on Thursday, it'll be the job of my students to rewrite policy statements for both parties, and maybe we'll send them to, you know, the right people that see that college students can develop a better policy towards the region than what we see at the moment. But, you know, this is a really scary development. We have a ground war by Israel against, you know, in Lebanon. I forecast the potential collapse of Lebanon as a functioning country. I mean, you know, Hezbollah has been basically weakened to the extent that I don't think there's serious player at the moment. I think there are so many issues in Lebanon that we will see probably 5.5 million people desperately trying to survive this because they already have a weak economy. They already have horrendous conditions in the country, and they have a terribly corrupt, incompetent government. We don't hear anything from the Netanyahu government on the hostages at the moment. It seems like the families that have been advocating and begging and pushing for some kind of arrangement and deal are sort of in the background now. Of course, Iran is now, I think Iran made a horrible error sending ballistic missiles into Israel because now they're going to be hit in some way. I think the military won, and the Revolutionary Guards won in Iran, and the new president in Iran, Pezeshkian, he has just been in power since July, since the prior president died in a helicopter crash. He is not going to be able to contain it.
We'll pause there. We're going to take a break. We're going to get an ID, and then we'll go over to Pledge Central, and then we'll be back with more conversation after this.
This is Northeast Public Radio, WAMC FM HD 90.3 Albany, WRUN HD 90.3 Remsen Utica, WAMK HD 90.9 Kingston, WOSR HD 91.7 Middletown, WCEL HD 91.9 Plattsburgh, WCAN HD 93.3 Canajoharie, WANC HD 103.9 Ticonderoga, WAMQ HD 105.1 Great Barrington, WWES HD 88.9 Mount Kisco, WANC HD 90.1 Stamford, WANR 88.5 Brewster, WQQQ 103.3 Sharon, and WAMC AM 1400 Albany.
I have only just a minute, only just a minute. I have
half a minute.
All right, 30 seconds. Hey, 800-323-9262. That's the number. We're going to break for news. We want to let you know we're still raising money for this radio station, Sarah LeDoux.
Yes, indeed we are. And we have a challenge on the table, two separate $1,000 challenges, one from Anonymous in Albany and one from Anonymous in Washington, Mass. If we can reach the $250,000 point in the drive by noon today, which is just about 2 hours from now. And right now we are at $238,479. With everything going on in the world, we want to bring you BBC News, and here we go.
Welcome back to our discussion and to our roundtable panel on this Wednesday morning, right? Yeah, okay. Wednesday morning. It is the 2nd of October. I have to check and make sure. It's a lockbox edition of the roundtable panel, and we'll be talking to you for a few more minutes. And I also just a quick reminder that at 10:30 we are going to have another lockbox discussion. This one on climate, plastics, recycling, and we'll be doing that at 10:30 this morning. So that's coming up. Also, as I mentioned earlier in the program, we're adding a guest to our discussion right now. She was with us when we had the discussion for the presidential debate just a few weeks ago, and we are thrilled to have her back. Rachel Cobb is associate professor in the Political Science and Legal Studies departments at Suffolk University. Rachel, good morning. How are you? Okay. So we don't have Rachel.
Not yet, at least.
No, but maybe we will. Okay. So, given that, I have other things to talk about.
Excellent.
Okay.
More letters?
We have a couple more letters. We have this one from, I highlighted my favorite letter,
okay,
which is Phyllis. Vance's steel blue eyes doing side glances all night reminded me of a sleazy fox.
Well, we love foxes. And secondly, I also did mention earlier the whole, looking at the clock or whatever he was doing. It's made him seem untrustworthy, in my view. I mean, we agree both men could have improved the way they are, sort of appearing to the listeners or the viewers. So I think both made mistakes like that, but, of course, we love the Fox reference.
I saw a great cartoon meme this morning that showed them as A cat versus basically a big floppy-eared dog.
I bet I know which one was the dog.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was definitely it was. But I looked at it, I'm like, yeah, that's kind of right. You know.
Yeah, but that really makes cats. It plays into the stereotype of cats being mean.
Well, my cat is the biggest jerk in the universe. I will just say that he's the one that makes people not like cats.
Oh, okay.
Tuca will bite you for no reason.
Oh, well.
You know, hide out and attack your leg as you walk by. Yeah, but he also kills lots of things. Yeah,
you say that as a plus.
Well I live on a farm.
He's a barn cat, really.
Well, he's outdoor, indoor. Yeah. He is, and he thinks he's a dog. He actually brought home a baby rabbit and gave it to the dogs.
Oh,
wow. That's nice. Yeah. Very thoughtful.
This is kind of like a lion thing.
All right. We found Rachel. Rachel Cobb joins us, associate professor in the Political Science and Legal Studies Department at Suffolk University. Hello, Rachel. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I'm well. How are you?
Doing fine. Good to hear your voice again. Thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it. So we have been talking over the last hour or so about our thoughts on the debate. I'm interested, given your expertise on debates and debating, of what you made of the 90 minutes that took place last night.
Well, I would say, as a good political scientist, and I actually thought the media did a pretty good job of saying this too, debates don't have much impact. So our discussion today is about something that, will have a maybe no effect, maybe a couple of voters found something out of it. But I think both candidates had an agenda, and both of them accomplished some of what they set out to do. Clearly, J.D. Vance is a good debater, and he was ready, and he was smooth and articulate and sort of smoothed over the rough edges of Trump policies. And he, had very unfavorable ratings going into the debate, and I think really set out to be a reasonable, easygoing person who was gracious and polite. And for the most part, he did that and came across. And it was a very policy-oriented debate with much to talk about policy. On the other hand, Tim Walz, who I think definitely started out of the gate a little rickety, found his footing by the time they got to reproductive rights and articulated some general Democratic Party talking points and the policies of the Harris administration what they hoped to be. So it was an informative couple of hours.
An informative couple of hours. And then that's what we can, to the point of that they don't really matter. But I'm going to hone in on what you said about Vance's poll numbers. Do you think that changes at all, or the people who felt the way that they felt about him aren't going to change their mind any, which is to extrapolate. It's not going to move the numbers of this very close contest in any great way.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that is remarkable about what is happening in politics right now is just how immovable people are. There's just this very small sliver of the electorate that is undecided. The swing states are 50-50. It is going to come down to most likely a couple of 100,000 whatever votes, but it will be very close, and very little seems to change people's minds. Changing minds is hard to do, and it seems even more so. I mean, one of the sort of long-term discussions about our politics right now is that we've become more tribal. And when our identities are so tied to party and so tied to allegiance, it is much harder to kind of break through and shift things. So people may have come out of this debate saying, wow, Vance really seems to know what he's doing. He could be president. Still not going to vote for him, but they may have, so those numbers may have shifted in terms of favorability, but whether that translates into voting behavior, Haley, I mean, boy, if that were the case, then we'd have a much more dynamic race than we do.
Yeah, and did you see the CNN numbers about a quick survey afterwards that the favorability of both of them, Walz's went up and so did Vance. I mean, he was still a little bit underwater, but I think he went from a negative 22 to a negative 3.
That's a lot.
So I mean, it was, yeah, I mean, both of them, I think, came across as somewhat reasonable.
Right.
Because of the civility, too, right?
Mm-hmm. Just the fact that there wasn't too much craziness, yeah. Until he said, I'm focused on the future rather than wanting to talk about January 6th.
I'm curious, Rachel, about, we're going to go a whole month here, and I realize there's early voting and the playing field has changed a little bit, but we're going to go an entire month. It is unusual that the last debate of the cycle would be this early. And so I just wonder, does that have any effect, or does that go back to what you said earlier about that these really don't matter largely anyway?
Yeah, I think it goes back to that. I mean, the Harris-Trump debate was a spectacle that everyone, or, you know, a lot of people tuned into. And it had that sort of uniting feel to it. And there really is not, I mean, unless that shifts, unless Trump decides that he wants to debate, that kind of, I could imagine that if there were one more, that might have some marginal impact because people really could go and vote the next day. It really could mobilize a handful of people that may be important. But at the end of the day, the tune in now is however these campaigns can reach people, which is a struggle.
Joe, did you note that yesterday during the debate, Trump tweeted that he actually wasn't going to do the 60 Minutes interview
Correct.
Because mm-hmm. of a perceived slight from 4 years ago? And the question I have is that do you think this is just part of him just pulling back and saying, I'm just going to roll the dice on what I've got?
What do you think, Rachel?
Oh, sorry. I didn't know if that question was coming to me. I apologize.
Oh, that's okay.
How do I climb into former President Trump's mind and know what he's thinking?
Well, preferably with a Tyvek suit, but yeah.
Well, I mean, for those who may not remember, he was on with Leslie Stahl, and he was doing an interview prior to the 2020 election. There were, I would say, questions that were, you know, were pointed. I don't think they were especially tough. And he got up and walked off and walked out of the interview.
That's right.
The question I have is, why would you even enter talks? Like, if you were aggrieved by it and you don't want to and you don't want to get into that again, then why would you even agree to the discussion to have it? And so I guess back to then Bob's question of, do you do this because it's showing that you're pulling back and saying, okay, I'm leaving everything on the table, but this is what I'm leaving on the table?
I mean, it seems to me that you do it because you seek attention, but then you want to show that you're controlling something, and then saying that the whole narrative of the media being against you is why you're ultimately rejecting it. So wooing it and then rejecting it at the same time. You know, if I were advising campaigns, and there's a good reason I'm not, so I didn't take it for what it is. I would say
I
would not, at this point in a campaign, I would go with what I'm good at and not rattle the boat with something that could potentially have some little effect here or there. You know, these interviews have, I think, even if he says they're the greatest thing that's ever happened, they haven't really helped him much. But as I also said previously, nothing seems to really help or hurt this very sticky set of circumstances. So what it comes down to is turnout and voter mobilization, right, and getting your side to vote. And so whatever helps on that front is what you should be focusing your energy on.
We'll give Rachel Cobb the last word on this special edition of the roundtable panel talking about the debate. My thanks to Vera Carius Kelly. You're going to stay on for extra innings. Heather Mulligan, Bob Griffin, and Libby Post. We go over to Sarah Ray.
1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262. That is the phone number to call to support WAMC, to let us know that you're out there, you're listening, you believe in the mission of the station, and if you have a few, you know, a few cents, a few dollars, you can support us.
And if you believe in love, we also want to hear from you. 800.
Do you believe in love? Do you believe in life after love?
With no auto-tune. 800-323-9262. That's the number. Sarah LaDuke.
Ray Graff.
We got a big old challenge on the table. $2,000. Anonymous from Washington, Mass. Has $1,000 on the table. Anonymous from Albany this morning put another thou on the table.
Amazing.
If we can hit the 250 mark by the end of the roundtable today.
Which is at noon.
Correct.
Eastern time.
And we're in the 9,000s.
That's right. We have raised so far $240,460. Amazing. So generous, everybody.
Thank you. If you have done it today, we love you. We love you. We love you. If we haven't, what's keeping you? 800-323-9262. That's the number.
That is the number, 800-323-9262. I want to thank some people who pledged this morning. Thanks to Diane in Beacon, New York, Anonymous in Schenectady, Chris and Susan in Worthington, Mass, Mary in Albany, New York, Dennis in Jackson, New Jersey, and Anonymous in Delmar, New York. We also heard from Phil and Barbara in Winchester, Virginia.
Oh, that's
Virginia.
California, Virginia, some other states as well.
That's right. We really enjoy the roundtable, formerly from Cambridge. Well, we'll hope that you're safe down there in Virginia after the big horrible, really,
yeah,
really impactful hurricane. And thank you so much for sticking with us, for streaming from Virginia, and for pledging. Thanks also to William in Ballston Lake, New York, who says, a few more coppers for the coffer.
I like it. Oh, I thought
like
you were
too.
Saying that.
No,
oh,
I stole it from a listener.
Okay. Yeah,
sorry. Right. Credit where credit is due, and that's to William. And we also heard from Anonymous in Amherst.
Now, Sarah LaDuke, I have a bunch of people to thank, too, but unfortunately, you hogged all the time.
Oh, sorry.
And now we're going to the congressional corner.
Yes, we
but
are.
I want to just reiterate, you can pledge right now, and while you're hearing stuff, WAMC.org to make your secure online pledge, or call. We have volunteers in the fund drive room, 800-323-9262.
It's time now for the Congressional Corner, and then we'll return with a special climate crisis panel.